for the peer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy. Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. We're here with Bruce Strong, my good buddy, John
Palmer.
Good
day, everybody.
Good day, mate.
Glad to be back.
And we got Tasty McDowell in the studio, right?
Hey,
we're talking about dry hopping. Not dry humping, dry hopping.
Done both. Fond memories of each.
See, now you guys, I don't know if I've contaminated you or what's happened.
We're just following your lead.
It's your fault, yes.
Exactly. Clearly my fault, but, you know, guys, I think it's the Shat-tastic.
I think it is.
Chad's really freaking awesome beer that I've drank about a gallon of at this point.
Yeah, I believe he dry hopped this with Simcoe.
Yes, a lot of Simcoe, and he cut out like the Warrior and Columbus and things like that, which he didn't. I don't know because you didn't have access to it, you know. With the hop shortage,
I wouldn't give him the hops. Yeah,
Tasty. Yeah, he's got the hops. He just didn't distribute them out. It's like, well, you're brewing my beer. If you're brewing something else, he would have cut loose with the hops, but. You're trying to.
Already better than mine.
The Tasty territory. You're in trouble. Speaking of which, John Palmer and I, we went to Australia.
That's right.
For the very first Australian National Conference.
And a fantastic time it was.
Absolutely. But one of the guys at club night, they had a club night, and one of the guys there, he's like, Jamil, try this. Tried it. Really nice beer, very tasty, well brewed. Guy knows what he's doing. He said, "Look," he says, "tell Tasty this is his recipe." the only comment I had, I think it was really well done. I think it was a little sweeter than your version. Yours is really dry, and I told him this, and just because a lot of people can't handle any sort of realistic criticism. I mean, Tasty, you're one of the very few.
I'll take all you got.
I think Shat can take it too.
Yeah.
And I thought this guy, since he's he appears to be a disciple of yours, he talked about brewing many of your recipes and having great success, and he was very proud of the fact that he brewed this recipe of yours, and I tasted it. And I've tasted your beer a number of times. And again, just a little sweet, and I think it may have to do with the malt choices he had available to him. He had to go with something a little darker as well, but a very good beer.
Cool.
And that whole club night scene, the whole beer scene in Australia.
It's really similar to here, really.
And they'll tell you, I think we're 5 to 10 years behind the U.S. beer scene. Well. Maybe, but
maybe in terms of the number of microbreweries or something.
But I'll tell you, still. There's some really good stuff. I don't think there's. I think you come over here, you're right in there. I think there's plenty of brewers here not brewing as well as they're doing in Australia, and not brewing the variety that they're brewing in Australia. So I think the Australians knocking some great beers out.
Yeah. Well, I say I had a lot of American style pale ales there that were spot on. I mean, very very.
Well,
good.
Little creatures. It's like Sierra Nevada, but done a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Matilda Bay too. That was one of my favorites.
Well, and I went around. A friend of mine took me around to a couple of breweries, and I tried various things. And there was the spectacular beers. And I warn everybody, we're going long here on our waxing eloquent, waffling on. We're going to waffle on for probably a good half hour.
But they deserve
it. So if you don't like that, just fast forward, and we'll leave you behind. But we've got to give props to our brothers in Australia, brothers and sisters in Australia.
That's right.
That are brewing. And a friend took me around to the Holgate Brewery in Woodend.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And there, I tell you, one of the beers that I thought was spectacular, that would be a spectacular beer here. People ask me, what beers have you had that you really liked? That's one thing about Australia is, how many times did you get asked, what do you think of Australia? Are you having a good time? Do you enjoy it? You know?
Yeah. Are you gonna stay? Are you going to get a chance to see things? Like, yeah.
Right. You know, there's like 200 people at the conference. I must have been asked 400 times.
How do you like Australia?
How do you like Australia? And I tell you, I love Australia. It is one of the
Me too.
Great, great. And, well, and I, you know, physically, all right, buildings and the land and all that, it's fine. It's, you know, I think you could find that in other places in the world.
Sure.
But the thing that makes Australia great is the people.
Yeah.
People are
so friendly.
Warm and funny and kind and, you know, all the great things you want somebody to be, you know.
Completely, you felt completely at home, just hanging out with your friends, right. Hanging out with your mates. It was just a great week.
And more so than just the, because, you know, people are thinking, well, you know, that's because you're at this beer conference and beer people are that way. Well, yeah, they are. And maybe they're a little more friendly than the average Australian. But I'll tell you, the average Australian is very friendly, very kind. You go into any shop or, you know, meet anybody on the street and they're just great people.
So. I was walking out to the Queen's Victoria Market.
Yeah.
Or Queen Victoria's Market there, and I'm just, you know, asking, you know, what's available and chatting with people. They're really friendly to help and point things out, share a little bit.
Well, and so we went to this Holgate Brewery, and I tried the Temptress there, which is their cocoa porter, chocolate porter.
Oh, really?
Absolutely stunning. Just stunning. Not good, not great, stunning. It had just the wonderful chocolate, slightly sweet up front with a real viscous kind of, you know, creamy body.
Yep.
And then this beautifully dry finish. The perfect dry finish that when you get not overly dry, not harsh in the slightest way, but dry. Just almost like kind of powdery dry and late in the palate. And after you've swallowed this, had a chance to appreciate it, you're going, you know, I'm ready for another taste. I could gulp down dozens of pints of that.
Yeah.
Just wonderful. Absolutely fantastic. A couple other great beers I had there. Two Brothers Growler, which is American brown ale. They're like, well, you know, maybe this is not as hoppy as you like in the U.S. They believe that we brew everything really hoppy.
Yeah.
This is more along the lines of a smaller Moostrel.
Oh, yeah.
Same
yeah.
malt character. Mm. Oh, wonderful. Just fantastic.
Great malt character.
And then Bridge Brewing? Oh, I'm messing it up now. And then
yeah,
the guy,
I'm not sure
And the brewer. I met the brewer and tasted his Saison.
Mm.
Fantastic. Yeah, it could have been a touch drier,
yeah.
But just the flavor profile, just a thing of beauty. And he also had an IPA that I really liked. It was a little too crystal malty for me. It would do great in the Midwest and the East, where they like a more crystal character in the IPAs and not so much here.
Not the West Coast, but yeah.
But, you know, technically brewing, you know, just flawless.
Yeah.
So
I had
so
a couple of really good ESBs too, where mm-hmm. they had the malt character, the fermentation character, and had the bitterness that I thought the ESBs were really, really good.
Yeah. Just fantastic. Well, and at Holgate I met what became my two mates, which is Peter Simons. And Barry Cranston, two great guys, great brewers, right? And they went around with me. I hung out with them.
Had dinner with them.
Endless number of hours. Yeah, we all went out to dinner at that Empress of India.
Yeah,
there,
great
which
place.
Which was a great place. Been there like 40 years. And there's pictures of like Cher when she was young and Neil Sedaka, all with this guy who was a fighter pilot for the Indian Army.
Oh, yeah.
Or Indian Air Force, and got shot down, and his arm all messed up in Pakistan, and it was just the food was spectacular.
Yeah,
and that's one thing about Melbourne, I think, is the food.
Yeah,
all so good. No matter where you go to the local sandwich shop, and it's great stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That was a wonderful city, and just the experiences we had were great.
No, I think it's colored by the people. Again,
yeah. Yeah.
Hanging out with Peter and Barry.
it was fun. Yeah.
It was absolutely one of the best times I've ever had. We went around to a number of mm-hmm. pubs, and we just sat there, and we had some beers and talked, and
the people that put on the conference were, you know, really did a wonderful job at organizing that and getting us. They put us up. They chauffeured us around.
I got a big props to Andrew, who headed the whole thing up, and John as well, and
Phil.
You know, Phil was wonderful. All those folks were absolutely wonderful, and you know, I feel like, you know, they've been thanking us for coming over. But
I
really have to thank them. I think we're the ones who should be, you know, most
Definitely.
Appreciative of this this whole conference and everything we did. And, you know, you know, if everyone in their life could experience this just once.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, we love going to NHC every year here in the mm-hmm, in the mm-hmm. States. And I know everybody at the ANHC had a great time. And I hope they do it again next year.
Right.
And because, I mean, I think the people there, you know, just, you know, brewers are special. I mean, this is a great time, meet other brewers, talk brewing, and to find so many mates that, you know, think the way you do and they're interested in the same things you are. It's always fun.
How many people attended? Did you guys say that?
About 200.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Which is
first
really,
one?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, better than Texas was a few years ago at the American version.
Yeah, I mean, considering they have, what, 10-15% of the population of the United States.
Right. Well, and I'll say this, not even 10%. More like 7%, right?
Yeah.
More like 300, they're 21 million.
Oh, okay.
You know, hard to say this, but I think I had a better time at the Australian conference than I the U.S. conference. The food was by far better.
Oh, those
the food
dinners.
Was incredible.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, we had two beer pairing dinners, and the first beer pairing dinner was all the beers were brewed by attendees of the conference. I mean,
right, right.
Ron and Tony.
Well, and the winners John. Of the national competition, like the Brewing Machine Award, those guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
oh,
the just stunning.
Yeah, stunning beers and stunning food. I mean, we were at the Anglis Institute there,
mm-hmm.
and there, you know, the students and the chef put together a wonderful dinner, and then the big banquet at the next day, where they announced all the competition
awards. Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Again, wonderful food mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. and wonderful beer pairings too.
Not as good as the night before.
Not quite,
but I'll tell you, it beat anything I've had at NHC.
Well, yeah.
Well, and though the exception to this, I believe, is coming up June 2009. We're going to
Francisco.
We're going to have our own beer chef, Mr. Paxton.
That's right.
Really, you know, pull out the stops, and he's going to, really
set
the
bar. We're biased because Sean's a good friend of ours.
Well, and he's really good at what he does.
Yeah, he is. Really is.
And he's a creative genius. So that's going to be great.
Yeah.
But so I hope everybody makes it out for the NHC there. And again, I wanted to go through a couple of things at Club Night. You know, and that's the thing I actually was anticipating the best beer at. You know, everybody talked about the local pubs, but I think maybe there's a I don't know. I think you know, people may still be kind of oppressed by the perception that a commercial brewer can do it better than, in that case, an amateur brewer, or, you know, we call home brewer. People here get offended when you call them amateur brewers.
That's true.
Over there, they get offended when you call them home brewers. So it's kind of an odd thing. You know, some of the best beers I had were there at that club night. There were some clubs that, I tasted at least one beer from every club. Some of the clubs I tasted everything they had because, they were generally very, very, very good.
Yeah.
Stuff that you would rate in the 40s and above on a score sheet.
Definitely.
But there were two guys that really stood out to me. One was, and I'm so bad with names, I'd recognize him in a crowd, but one was Michael. I thought his last name was Messner or...
I don't know. I'm first name based with everybody there.
Yeah. Actually, probably one of the best looking blokes in Australia. That's one of the things. Now, here's the thing on Australia. I tell you, I love Australia. I'll tell you, the women are really good looking,
mm-hmm.
but the blokes, they're just about as ugly as you can find anywhere in the world.
They're rugged.
Yeah, rugged. That's a very kind description. So a lot of you dudes are very ugly. There's a couple of dudes that are, you know, like better looking, but a lot of you guys in Australia, pretty ugly looking, like myself. But so
well,
maybe that's why we get along well.
There, yeah.
But you know, one of the things is they're brewing some great beer. So this guy, Michael, he had this pale ale I thought was the best thing I had at club night. Absolutely stunning. It had all the, I actually took a picture of the guy because the beer was so good.
Yeah.
And you had this pale ale with this really you know, rich mouthfeel, just the right amount of maltiness, and then you know, great hop character all throughout. Right balance of bitterness and, you know, a nice aroma, and really fantastic. And it was really neck and neck with this other guy. I think his name was Craig Weber. And he had an IPA, I think along the lines, kind of like a, almost like a double IPA or Pliny clone almost, made with Galaxy hops.
Oh, yeah.
And Galaxy, I think, is, I think it was Galaxy. It's yep. You know, to me, it had that same oniony kind of celery, oniony kind of character that I get in Simcoe.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, I said, hey, you know, you see a recipe that says Simcoe, just throw in your Galaxy hops and you're right in there. And that was fantastic, too. Really well balanced, you know, just beautifully brewed. The guy really knows how to brew. And when they asked me about the beers, they were interviewing me for the beers at the end, and I mentioned these two beers. They go, well, yeah, of course you're picking the hoppy beers. You're from, you know, the U.S. I'm like, no. No, I'm picking these because they were the best brewed beers. These guys have the best brewing talent of the folks here in the auditorium. There are other people who are winners, mm-hmm. but their beers were, I thought, so-so. These guys, they really know what they're doing brewing-wise. And lo and behold, come to the... you know, the award ceremony, this guy Craig, he was a runner up for the you know, essentially the best overall
show.
Brewer award for the most awards. So he won quite a, so my thing was, look, I'm just picking out the best brewer, you know, and I don't know if there's some relationship to brewing hoppy beers and best brewer, but maybe these guys who are curious about more styles and you know pushing the envelope, maybe they're paying more attention to a lot of other things, and you know, brewing really hoppy beer is an expensive proposition anywhere you go, so maybe that's part of it. They're putting more care in the beer, because those were some fantastic beers. I really enjoyed those.
Had been very curious before we went down, you know, how are the level of homebrews in Australia going to compare to level of homebrews we see here in the United States. And, you know, pleasantly surprised to see that they're neck and neck. You got some great brewers in Australia that really understand their ingredients, really understand the process. I think in general, the two of us, you know, Jamil, you and I noted that a lot of the beer styles or, you know, examples of style tend to be a little fruitier in Australia versus the United States. And whether that's, you know, yeast character that they're generally brewing with, or temperature, fermentation temperature, or maybe the hop variety like Galaxy and some of the New Zealand hops, which tend to be kind of a fruitier profile, you know, more fruity floral aromas in essence.
Yeah, I think there's some of that, something to be said for that, but I think it's also fermentation. I think the acceptability of a fruitier fermentation is higher in Australia, around the world, than it is
here in
the
U.S.
Yeah, in the U.S., we have a super clean, you know, ale that's almost akin to a lager. And I think, you know, around the world where they're brewing ales, not necessarily Germany, but around the world where they're brewing ales, you know, ale character is acceptable, you know, which,
right.
Oh, you know, go figure, you know, an ale should taste like an ale. So I think that's part of it, in that, you know, if we brewed something more along the lines here, we'd say, well, you know, do I need to pitch more yeast? You know, what do I do to get this, you know, these esters under control? And we, you know, we're looking for a super clean kind of profile. But I did taste a couple of beers that, I'm telling you, would rival American pub brew right here, you know, the best of it, as far as fermentation quality and, you know, malts and everything else like that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So, was that all about Australia? I think what we're going to cover today is...
I saw a possum.
You saw a possum in the...
In a tree
in the
park.
You also nearly stepped on a couple of people making out in the park.
That's true. trying to just do a little stargazing one night, and I almost stepped on some people. But
wait, we don't have to go to break now. What's that story?
Simply, well, it's actually quite boring. First time in the Southern Hemisphere, it's like they got different stars down there, and I should look
you're
up
looking
and
at them.
Look at them.
This is the Palmer household type of. Okay, so there's like some ancient dinosaur that, like, you know, looked at particular right. stars.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to be one of those stories. So I don't know why you're asking.
My fault.
Yeah, you know, focus on the naked couple.
That's all.
You actually tripped over a naked couple?
No, they weren't naked, but.
They were getting there.
Yeah. Can we say they were just for the purposes of the story?
Yeah,
okay.
Right. You know, you need to know how to embellish stories here.
And can we also say they were young and hot and not like old and retarded?
That is very true.
Is it true?
And there was a group of them, even.
Well, there were a lot of one of the great things about
we don't normally edit, but I think
about Melbourne is they got all these parks all throughout, scattered big parks.
I
right?
see.
Yeah.
And so just about anywhere you are, you can walk through one of these parks. Well, people in their lunch hour, they, you know, go to the parks and have lunch and enjoy the sun when it's nice and sunny out. And you know, a lot of the women, you know, they don't go topless, but you know, they start stripping down and go to the bras and stuff like that. And here in America, that would be a big deal. So, you know, I took notice of it.
And
just
you
from
gawked.
I stared. The drool would come out of the bra.
Stop and ask for directions or something.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, so it's you know, they make a big deal of enjoying the parks and stuff when the sun comes out. It's a nice thing. It's something I think we could do here instead of, I'll spend my lunch hour typing on my computer, which is essentially what I do, and why I look so pale and pasty all the time.
I'd rather see you in your bra in the park.
It's a good country.
Yeah.
Be healthier for you.
That's what I did in Melbourne.
Okay.
Had a little time to myself. And,
after the break.
Yeah, after the break, I'll talk about me in the park and the people I met and how I enjoyed myself. Yeah, after the break, we're going to get into dry hopping with our good buddy Tasty McDole.
Brew right. Brew smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong. Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty Christmas you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way. What have you gotten out of a vial of White Labs yeast?
WLP-001, Cal Ale, baby!
23, Burton Ale.
008, East Coast Ale.
Cal Common, WLP-810.
It's gonna be WLP-400 with beer!
I got a sweet hoodie for my vial.
Huh?
White Labs, your source for great brewer's yeast, would like to invite all homebrewers to join the White Labs Customer Club. Redeem your empty vials for great White Labs merchandise and products. Free yeast, glassware, t-shirts, baseball caps, sweatshirts, polo shirts, and you won't believe what you'll get for 5,000 vials. Members also receive a newsletter packed with White Labs updates and facts, interviews with professional brewers, brew your own clone recipes, beercook.com recipes, and customer club stories. The White Labs Customer Club. Save your vials and get in the club. White Labs. It's all in the vial. Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brew.
Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
Network.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking dry hopping is our topic for the day. I know we went waxed eloquent about Australia and our good mates down there, but now we got to get down to business because all the people who whinge about us going off topic.
Yeah.
Dry hopping. And all right, so we got our good buddy Tasty McDowell here. And does anybody have a... and Tasty makes some of the great dry hop beers. And he's actually talked to a lot of people about special techniques for dry hopping that are done in the commercial arena, things like that. Let's start off, like I like to start, with a definition of dry hopping. What's dry hopping? Anyone want to tackle that?
Oh, well, okay. Dry hopping is when you add... either whole leaf hops or pellets to the fermenter, and generally you add them to the fermenter after primary fermentation is completed or nearly complete. And doing so, you're adding you're not boiling off volatile oils that contribute a lot of the aroma to the beer. You're also getting some flavor. You get raw alpha acids, that is unisomerized alpha acids, contributing to flavor of the beer. And so by dry hopping, you get a unique aroma and some flavors that you don't get from any other hopping process, so whether it's a hop back or late hop additions in the boil.
Well, that's an interesting point. Mike emailed me and he said, Jamel, I've been meaning to get your opinion on dry hopping. First, do you, in the general styles are... The general says they require strong hop flavor. Do you dry hop in the ones that require strong hop flavor? If so, what's your procedure? Leave for pellets, bags or not, primary or secondary, a keg, leave it in the keg, remove it after done, how long and how much? It's a complex question.
It is.
I responded with a three-word answer. Look it up. No.
Wait for the show.
I said, it isn't necessarily the strong flavor or, that you get from dry hopping. If you're looking for hop flavor, it isn't necessarily that you're looking for dry hop flavor. Dry hop flavor is different than late hop additions or
That's
earlier
right.
hop additions. Or even hop back additions. They're all completely different. And with the dry hop, you're going to get more of a...
fresh, raw hop, cones in your hand kind of aromas.
I think a big part of that is kind of a grassy, kind of leafy, grassy type of character. Wouldn't you say, Mike?
Well, yeah. I mean, might lean towards more vegetative. That's mm-hmm. that hop is typically grassy. You're going to get that, and those that are like minty or perfumey, you're going to get that side of it too.
But yeah, I mean, I think the difference between late hop, dry, hop back, and dry is,
right.
you really emphasize the aroma, fresh hop aroma that you smell.
Right.
But again, I think you're right. But I think part of what makes us imagine it's fresh is that grassy, vegetal component that Mike's talking about.
Yeah.
That makes you think, oh, fresh hop. Because I think a lot of the hop flavor and aroma, there's some aromatics that are driven off so quickly when you drop those hops in hot wort that they're gone that quick.
Right.
So some of those you're going to capture in the dry hop. But I think it's kind of that vegetal thing that that kind of lends to it.
Yeah, it smells like the hops like they are in the bag before you use them. That's what that's the best smell of hops as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And of course, once you boil them or put them under heat, that you get a different product.
Yeah.
But dry hopping, you get pretty much what you smell in the bag.
Well, here's one interesting thing to think about as we talk this evening about hop aroma and dry hopping is that noble hop aroma is not dry hopped. That is a product of the boil.
Yeah.
And those
long boil.
Yeah, the long boil.
60-minute boil at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are epoxides and oxides of the hop oils and acids in hops that create those noble hop flavors that you are used to from German lagers and so on. But when it comes to fresh hop aroma with the hop oils like linalool and geraniol and terpenol and all these other fruity, piney, floral aromas, that's the kind of aromas you get from the oils and dry hopping.
That geranium type of character. Yeah. You know, when you get to the floral. Well, I'll tell you this. The folks in Germany, I don't think they would ever dry hop. They think that's insane, because what they're looking for, and people who are, you know, keying on first word hopping and all this, they're talking about boiling the snot out of the hops to drive off all those flavors that you might get dry hopping.
That's right.
And getting rid of any of that character. They don't want that. They don't want any even late hop character. They want to boil the daylights out of it. So if you first word hop, you're boiling it even longer. You drive off all those volatiles that affect and make a less perfect hop flavor, mm-hmm. right? So that's part of it. And the dry hopping, so if you're making like a German style, I don't think there's a German style that deserves dry hopping. Dry hopping is more of an English American type of thing.
Yeah, I would agree.
And maybe an Australian thing now.
Yes, that's very true.
Right.
Yep. Only where it's appropriate.
So that was one of the questions that I got in from Jim, and he asked me, do you ever dry hop your American pale ales, IPAs? You know, what other styles do you dry hop? What's dry hopping appropriate for? Mike, what would you say styles are appropriate for dry hopping?
Well, obviously the American, you know, APAs, IPAs, double IPAs, that kind of thing.
Anything American?
Anything, well, not everything American. I don't know. Like sometimes, like a beer that's like low in malt, low in gravity, I don't know. You know, something like the hops might tend to dominate if you bring out the hop flavor by accentuating the hop aroma. It's like anything, you know, like food. If it smells like something, it's going to taste more like that something as well. So,
good
I mean,
point.
You can, you know, dry hopping a low gravity American ale, I don't think it's that appropriate. It kind of creates a conflict in there.
I tend to dry hop a lot of my American styles. Just, I mean, not excessively, but I think in terms of my home brewing compared to, say, you know, standardized European styles and other BJCP, I like some hop aroma in my beers.
Yeah, what I make for personal use as compared to competitions, I tend to dry hop more.
Yeah,
like for instance, my amber ale. I mean, when I make it for myself, I dry hop it, you know, pretty aggressively because I like that beer that way. But in competition, they kind of don't like it with that big hop aroma.
Right.
No, they're just weak in their judging skills.
Sometimes I sneak it by, but not very often.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into how you dry hop, right? So we kind of understand what dry hopping is.
Well, I'm sorry, before we go on to that,
styles you use it.
Do you ever dry hop a lager, Jamil?
You know, I've dry hopped Bohemian Pils.
How'd you like it that way?
No, it's not appropriate.
Okay.
You know, people talk about the flavor and aroma, and we go overboard on it. But, you know, if you truly get the best examples of the style, I don't think you really get a lot of dry hop character in there.
Okay.
All right. So, why? You got a problem with that?
No, just curious.
You got a problem with me and my lagers? And
a little bit of dry hop in Helles, maybe? Or
No. You're screwing up your Helles.
Kolsch?
No,
they're hard enough anyway.
This is why I do the style show and John's on the technical Bruce Strong show. Because clearly he's just a freaking heathen.
I'm a maverick.
I'm going to punch you in the junk after this. All right. So back to what I was talking about, trying to keep this on track. You know, how do you go about, and you realize this is the third show, and there's like many pints of Chad's Shat-tastic in me. So things are going, and everybody here, so it's going down the tubes. How, you know, what's the process of dry hopping? Mike, you know, run us through what you think is the optimal process. I've got my wort, I've pitched my yeast, what do I do? Do I just throw the hops in at that point, or, you know, walk me through the process that you would do?
I'll tell you what I would do, because I really don't know optimal, but What I do is I wait till the ferments, you know, it's in the secondary. I would say that the ferment's about 85 to 90% complete. That is, it's still bubbling. There's still fermentation going on. There's still croizen on top of this ale. And so then I dry hop in a hop sack. So I sterilize a hop sack, put ample dry hop in there, which I tend to want to do.
Do you use pellets or whole?
Pellets. I tried whole. Don't like whole too much. They tend to, they're hard to sink, which is a big thing. And I'm not a big fan of having hops at the, at, you know, half in the wort, half out of it.
And they really don't stay that fresh for very long.
Yeah.
Pellets stay fresh for a long
time.
Yeah.
They have much more pop to them. You might have to use a little bit more because of the, with the pellets. But, you know, you just adjust your recipe to get the amount of aroma you're looking for. Anyway, about 90% complete in the fermentation. I drop the hops in. I use weights to get it to go, you know, gently to the bottom. I don't want it to go down there and make a big clank, or anything. I just want it barely to sink. So I got that figured out by just weighing the weights against the weight of the hops.
What are you using for weights?
Extra stainless steel fittings and stuff.
Couplers
and
not lead tire weights, huh?
No, lead. So I gave up on lead.
You could get yourself some stainless nuts at the hardware store.
That's work, sure. Yeah, nuts or marbles.
Put your nuts in there or your marbles in there.
Anything easy to sanitize. That's
really don't want to use copper or brass because post fermentation,
acidity.
The copper can catalyze oxidation reactions. So before fermentation, no problem. After fermentation, you want to avoid copper.
All right, so you weight that down. You were saying an equal amount of weight material,
right.
Stainless or know, fittings or nuts, equal to the amount of hops you're trying to sink.
Generally, just to make sure.
That's a pretty close approximation.
Yeah, I don't want it to be like
bottom of the carboy.
The carboy way. Well, of course, I'm using
plastic buckets.
Well, I'm using a conical.
Oh, you're using conical.
Carboys are a little tough. I mean, getting hops into that neck of that carboy are pretty tough. Uh-huh. And getting them out as well. I'm not quite sure what to do about it. You wouldn't want to use a hop sack, obviously. I guess they make some of these, what are disposable or something. They're sort of long where you could actually get it through the neck of a carboy. I don't know.
Yeah, I go just loose hops. I just throw the pellets
I'm going to start going that way next year. This is basically, to me, the end of last year in terms of the brewing cycle. And this is the beginning of the next year, starting, I guess, in December for me. I'm going to start going just loose hops, I think. Yeah. Anyway, so I put the hops in when there's still a fair amount of ferment because I feel that, you know, there's oxygen included in those hops. Mm-hmm. Something's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically take the lid off my conical to put them in there, you know, so there's some air introduced there. So I want to make sure that gets scrubbed out in the ferment.
That's a real good point. That's what a lot of the professionals do. Mm-hmm. Micros like Firestone Walker and so on.
Right.
They as a standard procedure, they put them in not after primary fermentation, but towards the end of primary fermentation.
Yeah, I don't give a crap. Okay. That's my procedure.
Really? Okay.
Well, if there's yeast in there at all, they suck up the oxygen so fast that I don't think it really matters.
Okay.
I may be wrong, though. Tasty's
not
the
a bad theory.
Tasty's the one to follow. Don't follow me.
Well, you know, something about putting them in, you know, when there's quite a bit of fermentation is, the yeast are going to consume those hops in some way. I mean, there's obviously the scrubbing part that will maybe diminish the aroma, but
the yeast
are consuming this hop flavor, and they're putting something out that might resemble another flavor. So there's more going on.
And you talk about transferring to a secondary.
Yeah.
Right. See, and that there you're picking up more oxygen than you will from the hops. That was my theory.
Okay.
I may be wrong. I don't know anything. I'm just pulling this out of my ass. So, don't listen to me. Steve asked a question along those lines. He said, sorry to bother you, but I wondered, what is your process for dry hopping? I've taken your advice and ditched my secondary. However, I'm doing an IPA, and I began to think that I should be using a secondary in this case in order to dry hop. You skip the secondary on most of your brews. Now, how do you dry hop? I just throw the hops into the primary after the bubbling stops. Thanks a ton, Steve. And like I'm saying, you know, you got to transfer. I gave up on secondary.
Right.
But the time that I will is like fruit beers, sour beers, and dry hopping. Like Mike's saying, when it's, you know, towards the end of fermentation, maybe 90% complete, you rack to your secondary and add your hops and go from there, right?
I do a unit tank. I don't do. I don't transfer the secondary. I'll drop the yeast in the true.
So you don't have the pickup of oxygen there, like I do, transferring carboy to carboy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't do that.
Yeah, I'll take the. I'll kind of represent Firestone here. We talked about having Matt on the show tonight. Talk about the dry hopping that they do in Firestone Walker beers. He couldn't make it, but I do have a presentation he gave at the Southern California Homebrew Festival a number of years ago, and they tend to remove the yeast plug prior to dry hopping,
mm-hmm.
but they are usually within like one Plato. That would be like 4 points of their terminal gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some, you know, some active fermentation.
He
still
likes
going
the
on.
CO2 evolving as well,
right? You know, and help scrub out the dissolved oxygen. The yeast are a little more active. They're taking up oxygen, which, you know, he feels is from a professional brewer's point of view is very important for stability,
mm-hmm.
beer stability. He recommends relatively short contact time and relatively warm temperatures for dry hopping,
mm-hmm.
something along that, you know, 65 F, you know, 20 C, and you know, 3 to 4 days contact time, and then they move the beer after that. But I think otherwise, you know, I would go with maybe dry hopping in the primary, or, you know, at the end of fermentation, or maybe rack into secondary. But again, the reason you would rack it off the yeast mass is to, that was a nice one, to get that way your alpha, which will adsorb onto your yeast mass, and a lot of these flavors and aromas can be carried out of solution. You get that yeast out of there first, and you don't lose as much of your dry hop aroma and flavor to your yeast.
Yeah.
The resins and acids of the hops will coat the yeast as well.
That's
if
right.
You're looking at repitching. The it's one of the reasons that you know, your pitching rate affects bitterness. So kind of getting off track here, if you pitch more in a beer and you have more cells, it's the same mechanism that people believe you know, hops prevent bacteria from breeding and protect the beer from infection. It's the same mechanism. So the yeast, you know, the resins coat the bacteria cells and keep them from replicating and getting more bacteria. It's the same thing. It coats the yeast and reduces the viability of the yeast as well. But that tends to pull out bittering and other flavor compounds out of the hops. Mm-hmm. So you know, the more yeast you have in there, that's going to affect you know, your overall flavor. So, Mike, after you've dumped your bit of yeast and you put your hops in there in a mm-hmm. sack, weighted with a stainless to just drop to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you doing temperature wise, time wise? How do you determine how much hops, how much dry hopping to do? Versus time, versus temperature. It's got to all be interrelated, right? And recipe.
Yeah, it has to be. So, you know, I just try to, you know, on by style, I try to be consistent with the way I do ferment. So at that point, if that being held, constant, then it's just a recipe issue as to what, you know, if I want more hop aroma or less hop aroma. I'll know that the last, you know, 2 days I raised the temperature up to 72 because that's just what I do. I mean, it's just the way I do the ferment. So basically, you know, I'll start my ferment at an ale 68F. That time I'm done, I'm at 72, 73. That means that the last, you know, when it's on the dry hop the latest, it's at the higher temperature.
All right. Our listeners want specifics. So APA, ballpark, average APA recipe, how much would I dry hop that? Am I at an ounce, two ounces?
No, no, no. About
10 ounces?
I think about 4 ounces for a 10-gallon batch. I'm sorry. A minimum of two.
For a five-gallon batch,
yeah, uh-huh. definitely for an APA.
And how long does that stay in contact?
Well, I generally do a week. Yeah.
A week?
On bigger beers, I might go a little bit longer. Or I'll cut the dry hop in half and do it twice. Like I'm doing a double IPA, and basically it's got an 18, 19-day ferment time instead of your standard 14. So I'm going to, you know, split that in half and do them like 5 days apart.
Interesting.
And then after the primary, which is, you know, I've dropped a lot of most of the dead yeast out of the bottom, then I'll rouse the fermenter every 2 days. I'll blow CO2 through the bottom port. Just get the yeast and that hop sack, you know, back up in suspension.
You want your sack dangling.
I want my sack in the air, you know, roaming free.
Right.
Yes.
Right. You don't want it all clumped down.
No. Everybody wants their sack. Like, out
you want
there.
Your slacks swinging throughout.
Yeah, free swinging. Here you go.
If I could jump in just to ask the obvious question, too. I mean, one of the big questions about dry hopping, right, is length of time, like contact time. And not just questions, but it's the one with the most answers to the question, too, right? So you're saying...
It's only one answer.
You think so?
Yeah.
So well, is it 7 days, like Tasty's saying, or is it 14
well,
days? What's the
taste.
One answer?
Taste.
Just taste.
Taste, yeah. Like if I...
Take a sample and taste it.
Okay. Because that's what I've gotten, I think, over the course of the Brewing Network, so many varied answers about is how long it stays that way.
If you could catch what I'm saying, the main thing I'm saying here is just be consistent, and then it's just a recipe issue. That is, if
that's
you're getting too much of this or too much of that, don't worry. Just go and adjust the recipe before you make the beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That is, if my double IPA, half the dry hop's in there 14 days, or I'm sorry, say 10 days, and half is only in there 5, well, when I taste the beer, and I'm thinking, well, this is really pretty grassy, you know, I may have to cut back on my change my process a little bit not to do that, you know, 10 days with the hops like that. But it's by taste.
Yeah.
To me, it's kind of hard to, like, say, I'm going to take this recipe, I'm going to make this beer, I'm going to make it perfect the first time. No, as soon as you think that's what might happen, you're missing the most important part of the process in that you can make it incrementally better. You just got to be ready to do that and do it. You know,
so yeah. one of the things is time and how long a time you might leave it and how that affects things and whether it's grassy or more aromatic or the things we're trying to capture. Right. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, what we're going to do is we're going to get Mike to detail, you know, his thoughts on you know, the kind of compounds you get. And John, you'll weigh in from a technical standpoint as to what kind of things you're extracting over a given period of time in dry hopping. We'll be back after this.
Carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong. We'll be right back. What's good for the earth, good for your body, and great for your brew? Organic ingredients. This holiday season, the organic ingredient experts, Seven Bridges Co-op in awesome Santa Cruz, California, offers you the gift that keeps on giving to our planet. Sustainable, fair wage ingredients to make the best organic homebrew you've ever had. There's a growing demand for organic products, and your choice to brew with them supports organic farmers worldwide. Brew organic, and you'll brew excellent beer that is free from chemical residues and genetically modified organisms, and you'll help contribute to a better world. If you're looking for organic ingredients, Seven Bridges offers a huge selection of USDA-certified kits and raw ingredients from 8 ounces to 50-pound sacks of grain, whole and pellet hops, and all the equipment you need. Seven Bridges, the organic homebrew expert since 1997. Visit www.breworganic.com. Attention homebrew shop owners at Fermentap. They know you're tired of buying the same old gear that everyone else has. That's why Fermentap offers the newest and most cutting-edge brewing equipment known to man. Since 1998, Fermentap has been leading the fight against the boring and mundane by offering strange, unique, and just plain smart equipment. Like their stainless-domed false bottoms. Never deal with the floating plastic hassle of other false bottoms again. And since they're made from stainless steel, they'll last a lifetime. Fermentap's line of copper wort chillers are the best on the market, designed to cool your wort faster and more efficiently than other immersion chillers. They actually invented the equipment to make these chillers not only work great, but look great too. How about a fantastic line of ingredients, including vanilla beans, sorghum extract, blue agave extract, hop bitterness extract, unique wine yeasts, green coffee beans, sake kits, all stuff you can't find anywhere else. Fermentap carries all the standard products and equipment you need as well, such as all grain systems, stainless hardware, kettles, carbonation stones, you name it, they've got it. Fermentap's entire line of products has been helping retail shops meet the demands of their customers for nearly 10 years, and they want to help you too. For more information, see them on the web at fermentap.com or call Jason at 1-800-942-2750. Fermentap, better beer through innovation.
Did you know that every day a brewcaster goes to bed hungry? Did you know that that brewcaster is silently calling for the help of people just like you? Do you know that every day the unicorn and the rainbow have to blow sailors for loose change? For less than the cost of a half-calf, quad-shot, venti, extra-hot, soy milk, triple-pump, hazel, low-fat foam, double-cupped macchiato a day, you can help starving adults in Pacheco. Your love can be felt for as little as 7 cents a day. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com/donate to sign up today for as little as $2 a month. Private first class in the BN Army. Buy your way up the ranks as corporal, sergeant, ranger, or colonel with an easy-to-do monthly donation that keeps brewcasters alive and your favorite internet radio station broadcasting. No donation is too small to help those in need. Can't you find it in your heart to share your love with a brewcaster? In return, you will enjoy the wealth of knowledge that comes with every episode of The Session, The Jameel Show, and yes, even that other show. Thank you for listening, and please sign up for your donation at thebrewingnetwork.com/donate today.
You're listening to The Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical, this is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking dry hopping. And I'm here with my two good friends, John Palmer and Tasty McDowell, and a couple other good friends in the studio. Justin and Chad.
Biscuit.
Biscuit, yeah. There you go. Well, you know, you get a dog to lick you, you know, in that special way. It's always great.
That's where you put the peanut butter.
Put away the peanut butter.
See, I have never done that, and that's the thing.
You use malt extract, right?
Exactly. The dog's like that. Just no, please. All right. So, what were we talking about? What was the next step?
Dry.
The flavors and the flavors of dry hop. So, Tasty, you were talking about, you know, if you've got a recipe and it calls for 10 days of dry hopping, like a big beer, like a Pliny, and you're doing 5 and 5,
right?
You know, maybe you've tasted the result and it's too grassy, you said, or too vegetable.
Well, no,
maybe,
I'm not saying that. You know, for me, that's what I'm doing.
Right.
But I'm saying if I'm tasting the beer or having good palates like your own taste it, and if they, you know, say, oh, you know, taste a little bit this, a little bit that, I think about, well, you know, both my process and my recipe, but I always like to hold the process as pretty much constant as I can. So that I can do repeatedly.
So what key indicators tell you to go less or more time on the dry hopping?
Well, I guess the main thing I look for is, am I getting the effect that I want from the amount that I'm putting in? Sometimes I'll put in a lot of other dry hop, and I'm not really getting a lot of hop aroma. And those situations, I tend to question, well, what's going on? And that's why I'm changing my process this year. I'm going to take them out of the hop sack and just going to let them, you know.
You're going free.
I'm going without the sack.
Free hop.
Free hopping.
Well, let's talk ingredient a little bit, too, because that can have a profound effect. Today's high alpha varieties generally have more oil, you know, per pound or percent weight than the older varieties. So when you're looking for, you know, lots of hop aroma impact to your beer, you get a more pure hop aroma by dry hopping with a small weight of high alpha hops than you do with a larger weight of some of the traditional hops like,
Centennial Cascade.
Yeah. So, and if you're getting, you know, if you notice you're getting starting to get that grassy or a tannic, you know, phenolic or polyphenol, tannic or astringency out of your dry hopping, you know, that's an indication that you're putting too much hops in for too long.
Yeah.
You can improve that. You can bring it back to the aroma side by going with a higher alpha variety with more oil per weight, and put less vegetal matter in your beer, and a shorter contact time.
Yeah, I think what I'm doing like in most of my beers is the maximum amount of a low alpha dry hop I'll put in is about 3 ounces. These are 12-gallon batches. After that, if I want more dry hop, I go with like the higher alpha, possibly one that's already in the beer. Could be the bittering hop. I've done that many times. Just use the bittering hop as the dry hop.
Yeah, a lot of today's high alpha rye have very nice aroma characteristics.
Yeah. Simcoe.
Well, according to us here in the West Coast of the U.S., you go to other countries, they think we're crazy. But I tell you, a little cat pee in my beer, that's a nice thing, you know. those flavors and aromas, you know, they're not traditional, but gosh, you know, they're so exciting. And when balanced with a proper malt character, That can be a fantastic beer. And, you know, just open your mind and don't... It would be like, you know, somebody serving you snails. You know, you think, wow, yeah, that's a garden rodent or, you know, garden pest. You know, properly done, properly grown, probably, you know, balanced with other things you're appreciating, it can be a fantastic experience. So don't assume right off that any particular hop aroma is a negative thing, right?
Right. That's true.
And I think that's one of the great things we've done here in the West Coast of the U.S. is experiment with those hop flavors and, you know, oh, yeah, this is a bittering hop. Well, what does it taste like? You know, if you're going to throw it in just for bittering, well, what does it taste like? That is a good question.
I think that's a great point. You know, look for hop aromas. I think so often in the past, homebrewers have said, well, I'm gonna dry hop in the keg, and I'm gonna leave those hops in there for months as they slowly consume that keg, and that's when you start getting a lot of the tannin extractions and the vegetals on. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're gonna dry hop in the keg, limit the contact time, limit it to a week or so.
Well, put enough in that the contact time of a week or two is more than enough.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And keep it in mind, if you've got the beer at 35, 40 degrees, you're not going to get that much extraction out of it.
Right. The extraction's going to be better at warmer temperatures, like at fermentation temp.
Or room. Yeah.
Well, here's a question from Mike. Michael, the subject was Pliny the Elder clone question. I presently have my clone in a 6.5 carboy. I usually use CO2 to push my beer from a carboy into a bright keg. With this clone, would you recommend continuing this method and just dry hopping in the keg, or flush a carboy with CO2 and dry hop in there? I told him, you know, there's such a huge amount of hop material that goes into that Pliny clone that you're going to want to do in a secondary. Normally, but for me, I'll do it in a keg. If I'm tossing just an ounce, or especially like an English beer, like a bitter, where you only need a tiny bit. It's not about bold, huge hop flavor. It's like, you know, some floral aromatic backgrounds. Like you know, you put a half an ounce in a keg of a mild variety. That's okay. That can sit in the keg, and it's not a big deal. You can rack from keg to keg.
It's not that much material.
But on something like the Pliny clone, is this an acceptable putting in the keg, or do you need to go carboy?
Well, if it goes in the keg, it pretty much has to be in a hop sack, which is going to, you know, the more constrained they are, the less, you know, efficiency you can get out of those hops. They got to move around, I think.
You want them swinging free.
Swinging pretty
much. You don't want your sack too tight.
No, tight sack's not good. And there's so much, like you say, so much vegetative matter you're putting in there that I think you want to be able to get them out at some point. That is, as soon as you do something in the keg, you're sort of faced with the problem, well, how do I get it off these hops?
And that's where dental floss comes in.
Exactly. You can hang it in and pull it out. That works good.
Hang it in and pull it out.
Yes, right.
Kind of like
last
a tea
minute.
Bagging.
Exactly, tea bagging, yeah. And, or you can rack off that into another keg, which sometimes is pretty good thing to do.
It's like screw strong.
Racking off or
of
teabagging.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Are you in a different show? We're talking dry hopping here.
My fault.
Your mind's in the gutter. You and Bob Hansen, you're just like in the toilet here. Yeah. What's the matter with you guys?
It's true.
You know, we're talking serious brewing information.
Yeah.
We just repeat the information and somehow it takes on a whole different color.
You're right. My fault. Carry on.
Yes, exactly. All right, so I got another question from Zhao Pro or Herr Hiller. Either one. I don't know what the hell the guy's real name is. But he was saying, so he's trying to time his American Pale Ale for competition. All right. Now, Mike, I know Mike's an expert on this.
That's true.
Mike is a serious expert on timing for competition.
You mean I'm anal about it? Okay.
Well, yeah. You've given a lot of thought. You've done research.
I have done a lot of experimentation. And I'm always doubting that.
You've done experimentation. You've got results. Yeah. If anybody times for competition, I think it's you.
Well, and you rebrew for the second round. I mean, you know that you want...
Some beers need that, yeah.
Right. Well, and based on timing, too. He's like, well, do I have time? I got to brew it on this day. He's got it all down to a very specific calendar.
It's not that hard.
So he says, I'm dry hopping with an ounce Amarillo pellet. It's been almost 2 weeks. Put them into a sack. Sink to the bottom fermenter. Let's see. I was planning on fermenting primary about 4 weeks. Monday will mark 3 weeks of fermentation and 2 weeks of dry hopping. You think I should just keg now and cold condition so I have no risk of grassy flavors, or should I wait a few more days? This is also an APA. The competition is not until August 16th, and he sent this on July 19th. Do you think three weeks to a month in the keg is long enough to kill the hop flavor, or would you say I should be fine? So in other words, he doesn't want the hop flavor to completely drop off in a month. You know, is he going to be okay, or should he have?
I wouldn't time my beer by flavor dropping off. I would time my beer by flavor being at its best. If you got too much hop flavor, then you put too much hops in. An APA, I always figure at 6 weeks it's going to be at its best. Mm-hmm. If you require 3 months for the hop flavor to drop off where it's acceptable, you just made it too hoppy to begin with. Unless you were looking for that effect at the beginning. In APA, you got to keep in mind that style doesn't really recall for just a whole lot of hop aroma. Mm-hmm. They really like it if they can smell the malt, too. And sometimes the hop aroma gets in the way. They say it's not a very good APA.
Right. You don't want to overwhelm. Michael's beer at Club Night in Australia had a really nice balance. You could still get the toasty, malty kind of background and the hop character. And they were both very full. And, that's part of what made it a real magical experience for me.
Yeah. APA shouldn't be IPAs.
It's another stuff. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, again, have we talked about, how you determine the quantity of hops versus the 5 gallons? We talked about it a little bit, but, you were saying 2 ounces for 5 gallons, and that's like a starting point?
Yeah, I wouldn't even bother if I didn't do that much.
2 ounces.
Yeah, an American ale. English, put an ounce in.
Depending on style.
Yeah, or Belgian style or something like that, where you want just a little bit of marriage, with the bittering hops and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little bit's fine. But I wouldn't leave lighter beers, I wouldn't leave it on the dry hop for any more than a week.
Now, you have a great beer that I really enjoy, which is your American Wheat you did with Glacier Hops.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. Was bold, but not grassy. How did you get that character?
Well, I don't know.
Is it, a certain amount?
Well, on a wheat beer, I would in about 7 days, the beer will be, 80 to 90% fermented.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's when I basically, drop the vast majority of the yeast and, do the dry hop in about a week. It seems to work for me.
Right. Because I would think that, let's say we want hop flavor but no grassiness. Does adding more hops help with that? Or does adding more hops add more vegetal matter and you get more grassiness? More hops, shorter contact time gives you more aroma and less grassiness?
Yeah.
Or does fewer hops, less vegetal matter going in the beer, a longer time provide less of that vegetal grassiness? I'm of the opinion that more in a shorter time is the way to go.
I think I just prefer it because I think you do get the grassiness after more time in there.
I think there's one little point to add to that is there's amount and time, but there's also hop mass, hop strength, and time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use a small amount of high alpha hops, at a set time, you're going to get less phenolic, more hop character than you would for the same amount of hops of a lower alpha, and thereby a lower oil content for the same amount of time.
Okay, so let's say we're trying to add some hop aroma to a fairly delicate beer, but we want to avoid any sort of grassy vegetal flavors. What you're saying is try and pick from hops that have a higher alpha acid, thus having a higher oil, and you can use a smaller amount, less vegetal matter in your beer, shorter contact time, and you can get that aroma without the vegetal.
That's right. Although I do need to contradict myself in by pointing out that percent alpha and percent hop oil are not necessarily related, but in general, it's like cloud color and rain. You know, the darker the cloud, the more likely it is to rain. Same thing with alpha and hop oil content. Generally, especially in modern varieties of hop, the higher the alpha, the more alpha, the more oil they have. But the amount of oil in the hop is actually more of a function of time on the bind than it is necessarily alpha. But mm-hmm. with the breeding of hop varieties in the last 20 years, oil levels and alpha levels have risen.
You've been drinking or what?
I think so.
Yeah, it's the shatastic.
Yeah, it's very good. So, did I make a concise point there?
Yeah. Okay,
we've all been drinking. All right, so let's take one last break here, and when we come back, we'll wrap up and we'll get into the questions from the chat room.
Smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa, is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something.
Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Hi, I'm Sean O'Sullivan, the brewmaster and co-founder of the 21st Amendment Brewery and Restaurant in San Francisco. 6 years ago, Nico Freccia and I opened the 21st Amendment on 2nd Street with the intent of bringing back the local neighborhood brewpub. Well, the neighborhood has really changed over the years, but the 21st Amendment still remains a great place for people to meet over a terrific meal and a tasty pint of beer. In the past, the only way you could enjoy the 21st Amendment's handcrafted beers was at the brewpub. Well, all that has changed. Now, the 21st Amendment beers are available in cans. That's right, cans. When was the last time you had a great beer in a can? Well, that day has come. We're offering our world-famous watermelon wheat and 21A IPA in cans. Cans are a better package than glass because cans keep the beer fresher longer, but you can also take cans to places where bottles can't go, like the beach, lake, golf courses, and sporting events. So join us in the revolution to take back the can from the big breweries and crack open a cold 21A craft beer in a can. The 21st Amendment, 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park.
Okay, I rolled a 15 and I get a +2 from my yeast starter.
Nope, sorry, you failed your roll. Your beer is infected.
No way!
You had to beat a 24. It's schizosaccharomyces.
This sucks! I just failed versus oxidation! Our party is fracked! Doug's the only one left and his beer is a Berliner Weiss!
What's this? A tea party?
Hey, this is a brew session, man. Get lost!
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Does your significant other know the difference between an Irish red ale and a Flanders red ale? Do you burp, strizzle, spalt, and fart Y Yeast 2308? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the socially awkward Patter's beer and the sci-fi convention. Convention Showstopper number 8. Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking dry hopping with Tasty McDowell, one of the best brewers I know, and very knowledgeable about dry hopping. He actually goes around, talks to pro brewers and sees what they do, and he experiments with that and tries that in his own environment and sees what replicating that will do for the overall process. So, Mike, you know, before we go too far, all right, so we talked about how you start to dry hop. You know, can you give us, you know, other thoughts on the process? How do you get such great dry hop flavor and aroma without any of the negative drawbacks? I mean, kind of, you know, fill us in more on your process a little bit. I think that's what people want to hear.
All right. Well, I think this thing where I rouse the fermenter every couple of days during secondary fermentation, I think that tends to dry out my beers, first of all, but I think it also keeps the dry hop sort of like rolling over or doesn't get a chance to maybe interact with the yeast as much as it would if it was just sitting in the same place all the time. And
so you blow your fermenter.
CO2 in the bottom of the fermenter, yeah.
Every couple of days. Now, somebody using a carboy or a better bottle or a plastic bucket, could they
just pick it up and shake the hell out of it, you know, get it going.
Kind of get it agitated, yeah. Get that stuff right. Back up in solution?
You know, be prepared for, you know, sometimes if your beer is fermenting cold or under a little bit of back pressure, maybe because you're pushing a blow-off tube or something like that, you may have some CO2 in suspension. You know, the shaking is not, you got to be, you know, do it gently at first to see if you're going to have some sort of eruption of foam or something like that, but
gentle, so you avoid the eruption.
Yes, you don't want an eruption. But I think that's something that I think helps a lot. It seems to clean up the beer, maybe some of the stuff that's left over from the dry hop that, you know, that extra fermentation is maybe eats up the grassy flavor. I don't know, but yeah, I do tend to get really nice, clean hop aroma in most of my beers.
I think the agitation will help the polyphenols complex and settle out.
Okay. Cool. And when some people will say, well, wait a minute, when do you ever rack your beer? It's going to be, you know, once this thing settles out of a beer, I've seen it, you can shake it up, and in a just amazingly quick time, it just seems to fall right out. What takes, like, days to fall out, just falls right out in a matter of hours.
Hmm.
Kind of interesting.
So, all right, so we've added the hops. We were waiting, we waited till the end of 90% of fermentation, and either we rack to a different fermenter, or we drop the yeast if we're using a conical, and then we've added this charge of hops, at least 2 ounces for 5 gallons, and weighted with an equivalent amount of stainless to take it to the bottom.
Or marbles.
Or, yeah, any balls you got, you take it to the bottom. Now, all right, so we've waited a week, 2 weeks. Do we taste this along the way? I'm a big proponent of tasting, and when it tastes right, that's when it's time to stop.
If something's new, if I'm using a new hop, or, you know, something's a little bit different, where I don't really know if I want to leave, you know, how long am I going to leave this in there, yeah, I'll taste it, sure.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I can't taste enough to really know, but, you know, if I taste it and it turns out it was, like, too grassy or in there too long, you know, I'll at least know what it tasted like after 5 days, you know, and I shouldn't have let it go to 7 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just gets into part of the cycle. I think that's something that I hear a lot from people in the profession is they always taste the beer anytime they get a chance. I mean, as soon as it, you know, I always taste my, you know, out of my mash tun.
Well, I think the thing that stops homebrewers from that is they go, well, you know, I only got 5 gallons. So, they, you know, they're so protective of every little ounce where I think, you know, they're missing the boat that they could make a better beer if they followed their taste buds and tried it every so often. And if you waste a gallon, you know, what's the big deal if it results of 4 gallons of the best beer you've ever had?
Well, you're putting so much time into the process, and unless you're, you know, just totally oblivious to, you know, what you could be doing else with that time, it's worth the effort to get the best ingredients and the best process. And if you need to use a little bit more to get a little extra beer so you can do something with it, then I think it's worth the trouble. Just buy extra pound of grain and get that extra beer.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we got it towards the end, and then you just rack off to the keg, right?
Yeah. One thing I do, a lot of people don't think about this, is when I'm racking my out of my 12-gallon, i.e. 10 gallons of beer, I rack out in parallel. That is, I don't rack one keg and then the other, because, you know, the there's a certain stratification going on in that fermenter. You know, first thing I notice is, well, the beer coming out of the, you know, it's got the side racking arm. The first beer that, you know, that comes out is cloudier than what, you know, comes down from, you know, the later beer, because it's the top, it's clear. Well, I'm spreading that around between the two kegs, so I get consistent, you know, because a lot of that haze is actually hops in suspension, so I'm moving a fair amount of hops out of my my secondary into my keg, because to me, the keg is where I actually, you know, get all that stuff out of my beer. First thing I do after I rack into these kegs in parallel is I, you know, I chill them down to 32 degrees and just let all that stuff fall out.
And don't you filter as well?
Yeah, generally I wait a week or more, depending on whether I need the beer or not. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, typically I'll filter it.
And you don't think filtering strips any sort of dry hop flavor? Or?
Well, that's just a recipe issue. If it does that, I'll just add more dry hop.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever dry hopped after filtering?
No. No, I haven't.
Next experiment right there.
I could. Well, I got two kegs, right? I could not dry, filter one.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That seems like a novel thing to do, but... I don't really care, I guess. I don't need to know. I'm
going to
filter. Well, you know, I got a
that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
I got a 2.5 gallon keg of beer here today, and the only reason I got it is because I know I can bring it here, and it'll be as clear as the pint I pour at home because it's been filtered,
And it's good.
That's
and
true.
I just want to add my
good
2 cents.
Yeah. Well, that's help. I cheat, right? I think that's something we posted on the forum one day. That's how I get an advantage. I filter my beers.
Yeah, and I get an advantage, and I cheat because I don't filter my beers.
There you
go. Yes,
right.
Exactly. So,
well, each his own. Butthole.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing is, people figure we have an advantage, and that's why we do well.
The opposite things, yes.
Yeah, and we do totally opposite things, but people will blame us for both.
Right.
You know, so clearly there's something else to look at in your brewing process.
There's a little bit more going on
than filtering or not filtering.
Yeah, that's a relatively minor thing.
Yes. Yeah. More important fermentation. All that.
That's where it happens in the ferment, yes.
Absolutely. All right. We got a question from the chat room.
We do. Lots of questions coming in from the chat. Something that was brought up was dry hop temperature. Somebody had said, I'm certainly not speaking for Vinny Chalurzo, but they had quoted Vinny Chalurzo from Russian River as saying that 50 degrees Fahrenheit was his temperature for dry hopping. I guess what he had said was cold enough to drop Cal Ale yeast, but warm enough to still dissolve hop goodies that are in there. Do you guys have any comments about temperature of dry hopping?
I wonder if you know, Vinny's on to something there with you know, the yeast dropping out. Again, the resins and stuff from the yeast coating the or from the hops coating the yeast and the yeast pulling it out of suspension may actually have an impact there. Now, personally, the way that I dry hop is if I'm doing something with a lot of dry hops, I'll do it. I'll transfer to another carboy, and I'll put in, like, this massive amount of hops like Pliny the Elder. If I'm just touching something up and putting a small amount of hops in, up to an ounce or two, in 5 gallons, I will... transfer the keg first. You know, all the yeast is left behind. Transfer to a keg, and then I'll dry hop in the keg, and it'll be in the fridge, which is like, you know, 40 degrees.
Okay.
So, you know, the important thing is getting the yeast out of there. And I get plenty of dry hop flavor. I think the alcohol tends to help.
It's more the solvent than maybe.
I think in Vinny's case, I mean, he's a professional brewer. He's looking at time versus money.
Okay.
And so he's picking the best combination of factors to get the hop aroma in the beer in terms of time in the process and so on.
Because if it was time, maybe he'd go faster, he'd go hotter.
Right. Yeah. If you had time to drop the yeast first, then warm it up, put more hops in, less hops in, or whatever.
Right, right, right.
I mean, you know, we have a number of factors that we've talked about here today where you manipulate those factors to your advantage. And I think in a professional brewer sense, a case, you know, they're looking at money and time is kind of driving that, which factors they use.
So maybe isn't ideal for us because we don't have the same constraints.
Not necessarily.
Or he could do the recipe adjustment. He may have to do it at 50, but he uses more dry hop to get the effect.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's probably doing it at 50 to get it out of his very valuable 68-degree fermenter, you know.
Right.
Puts it in where he's got more
room.
Get the
next beer in.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that leads us to the next question. Which is, what are we getting different from the hops if we dry hop in the keg as opposed to dry hopping during the end of primary fermentation?
Again, I think some of those really delicate aromatics that are driven off by any sort of CO2 evolution through the beer, I think those are lost. I think you have a better chance of capturing them if there's nothing bubbling out. So one of the reasons a sealed keg is... useful in that respect. But it may not be critical. It may not be the most important thing either. I think there'd be a difference, but not necessarily a better beer.
I agree with that.
Okay. Oh, just a comment from somebody, too, that came through from the chat earlier, is the only reason I listen to this crappy-ass show is Tasty. So, Tasty, they're just thanking you for being here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Can you ban that person from the chat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can this be edited?
Gone.
Here's a good question. This person found that when oaking with oak chips, and they've sunk them to the bottom, when the staves have sunk to the bottom.
Stop. All right. So, here's one of the things I learned in Australia. Was the people in Australia told me, they go, you know, somebody asks every show about would you oak this beer, right? And they're making fun. You don't have to seriously answer that question every time.
All right, except that this isn't one of those.
All right. But they're saying, look, you know, that's what's happening is people are just, every show, they're going to ask you about oak aging.
Oaking
they're
this.
Not serious.
Gotcha.
So, all right.
All right, well, it's not an oak aging. It's just a comparison.
Okay.
But I will now, from here forward, be looking out for the oak
course,
aging questions.
I didn't even know that. You know, I'm like,
and
oh, yeah, well,
I.
You know, would you oak age? Yeah.
This is the problem with the honesty of our live show, too, is that if you ask a question, I've pretty much promised everybody that I will try to ask it.
Right.
So
right,
unless it's blatantly obvious that they're fucking with me, it's getting asked.
Well, they're doing it because of plissé. I think it's something about oak aging, as he said at one time.
Well, this really is a good question. It's just a comparison.
Right.
The person says, you know, noticing that when they oak age and the staves sink to the bottom, when they rack off the staves, that the you know, they've tasted it while it was still on there, and they were at the bottom near the dip tube, and they noticed, wow, this is really oaky. It's perfect. They rack off the oak age. That flavor changes. So they're wondering the same thing about, you know, sinking the bag of hops to the bottom of a keg. We're doing our taste test. It's sitting down near the dip tube. It tastes perfectly hoppy. Then we rack off of there. Are we going to be disappointed with the hop flavor of the beer?
Well, now, see here, this is why I believe not using a sack, not weighting it down, having the hops floating on the top, because I do believe that all those compounds are heavier than the beer, and they do settle to the bottom,
okay.
And you get more of a flavor throughout. And I think that, you know, there are things, it depends if things are lighter than the beer or heavier than the beer. And I think that's part of it. So that's one of the reasons I kind of stopped the whole bag thing. The main reason I stopped the whole bag thing was not having to sanitize a bag. So, you know, I'm lazy. I'm totally lazy.
Yeah.
But I think that's an interesting observation. And the same thing with the oak and all that. It infuses the local beer, but it's not going to make it up to the top. It's heavier than the beer, so it
right.
tends to
well, you know,
those compounds.
What I've done to get around that, and because I was fully aware
he's
of that.
He's blowing his fermenter.
Well, I've done that. Also, I've taken like a wine thief to get a sample,
mm-hmm.
where I get a pretty much top to bottom sort of sample of the beer.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when I'm trying to decide, get it off the oak or get leave it on the oak, I got to do that otherwise. Yeah.
So swirl the carboy or the keg.
Yeah, stir it up.
Whatever.
Like I say, don't. What
or
I found.
Blow CO2 through it.
Yeah, is it once things settle out, once they precipitate, you can shake it up and they precipitate right back out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, once it
so don't be afraid
of big enough
insolubles.
Yeah, right. Whatever they've done to make it, they do it. They're ready to go again.
Yep.
All right, another good question. What about, and does anybody have any experience with dry hopping with wet hops? Is that something anybody's ever done?
Tasty.
I've never used wet hops.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, I have not.
I haven't either.
I've heard of people doing dry hopping with
thought you did a harvest clone. Yeah, so you dry hop with wet hops. The only thing about that is, bacterial and wild yeast load, and, you're going to end up with some sort of infection in your beer, or a pretty good chance of it. If you're going to use wet hops, otherwise, so you want to put them in the last, like, a minute or two of the boil to kind of stun everything that's on them, because every piece of plant matter out in your backyard is covered in wild yeast.
And road dust.
Right. And if you just pull that off and throw it in your beer, you're going to get an infected beer. So that's one of the reasons that the harvest ales and the wet hop beers, they throw the hops in at the last moment. The pelletized and all that, they go through some serious heat. Now, you could use regular dried hops, but again, the kilning tends to kill off, I think, a lot of the
sanitizes them to some extent.
Kill off a lot of the wild yeast and stuff.
Okay. And the last question is a question that I have. Tasty, you always talk about this especially, but everybody does. A nice hoppy beer is something with a lot of hop aroma, hop characteristic. Age is not the best thing for that beer. Those characteristics drop out quickly. Same with the dry hopping characteristics? Is it the same compounds and the same profiles that you get from dry hopping? Do those drop out just as, the ones that you put in the boil?
Yeah, I think it's about the same as, like, late addition, like, hop flavor. I don't notice that the dry hop aroma and flavor is dropping out any faster than, like, a late hop addition.
Okay.
But it does drop out, and to me, at least in my taste, I get, like, staleness is what I'm getting out of, like, aroma that's gone away. So, I mean, I consider a dry hopping a beer is pretty much giving it like the kiss of death. This is a beer you don't want to be drinking in 4 months as soon as I do the dry hop. Now, other people could have different results. I've had different results. I had some beers today that I'd bottled a long time ago, and they were hoppy beers, and they were 8 months old, and I opened them and they tasted great. But just in general, and maybe I'm just noticing it in cake beer, once it drops off, either I'm either just disappointed in it, but I think it's more that it tastes somewhat like stale.
Okay. And that's it from the chat, other than to say I hope you guys recap the alpha acid conversation that Jamil and John Palmer that you guys had together, because I think it was really good. It was a question from the chat if alpha acid has to do with our dry hops. And between the two of you, Jamil, you did a great job of summarizing what Palmer was talking about in how alpha acid might affect the quantity and the length of time and all of that with dry hops. So good coverage on that, and just want to make sure you put it in the recap. And that's it from the chat.
Thanks, chat.
All right. So if I could remember what we said, that would be great. If not, at this point in the recap,
you could just rewind.
Rewind.
Yeah.
And listen to it again, and you're all set. I think what we were talking about was, John, you had mentioned the higher alpha acid the hop, the more oil it
generally has.
And I was saying... If you have a lighter beer, you want to avoid some of the grassiness or vegetal. Select from the varieties that will give you the appropriate flavor. Select something with a higher alpha than a lower, and try that, because you can use a smaller amount of hops.
You'll avoid some of the tannin load, the polyphenols, the grassiness from same amount of time. Let's say it's a week. If you put in 2 ounces of a low alpha, or let's say 3 ounces of a low alpha, low oil hop, you're going to get more tannin extracted in that time from 3 ounces than you would have, say, 2 ounces of a high alpha, high oil hop. And so you're going to end up with a cleaner aroma hop character or dry hop character from the higher alpha variety, because you got less vegetal mass in there.
So all things being equal, the less vegetal mass you can put in the beer, the less vegetal flavor you're going to have in the beer.
That's right.
You know, same thing with contact time. The less you can have for contact time, the less you're going to start extracting those tannins, which are slower to extract than the hop oils and stuff are extracted fairly fast.
Yeah.
And all the other compounds and stuff are extracted fairly slowly, so the less contact time you can have, the less vegetal and tannins you're going to get in that beer.
So, you know, if you wanted to shorten your time, from a week to a couple, 3 days, you could, you know, increase the amount of hops by an ounce and still get that much more flavor and aroma out of that hop with less vegetal.
Because all those vegetal and tannins are extracted over time. It takes a certain amount of time to extract those versus if you dip the hops in and pull them out, you'd get some hop flavor, but you wouldn't get any tannins or vegetal.
That's right.
Right, so there's some sort of a time zone in there in between. One of the things that Mike emphasized was that I don't know what he emphasized.
Yeah, I don't know what I was talking about.
I was drinking and didn't pay attention. Yeah. No,
Shadastic.
One of the things he emphasized was the need to agitate the hops throughout the beer. It's very helpful because, again, I think like one of the listeners mentioned, you get this settling of the hops at the bottom. You know, go ahead and stir it up. Don't worry about it. All the things, if you're worrying about clarity, all that stuff's going to drop right back down that you're stirring
up.
Anything that you're, anything really fine, you're not stirring up anyways. It's already in suspension, right. So it's not necessarily.
But by stirring, you get that hop character homogenous,
right.
And you know that when you're tasting that beer and say, okay, this beer is ready, mm-hmm. that you're getting a clear mm-hmm. picture of the entire beer, mm-hmm. not just the stuff at the bottom by the dip tube.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Definitely.
And then the hopping amounts that we recommend, Mike's saying, you really don't want to go for a hoppier beer. You know, if generally when you're looking at dry hopping, if you're looking at something like an English style, you're doing a half ounce or quarter ounce or something minor for a short period of time, and just to kind of brighten up kind of the hop character. If you're doing it in a West Coast American style, American brown, American amber, APA, IPA, and where your starting point is really 2 ounces per 5 gallons,
sure.
or
because you want to smell that
56 grams per 48 liters is where you're kind of where you're starting from. Or no, I'm sorry, not 48, but 56 grams per 20 liters is where you're starting, or 19 liters is where you're starting. That's your starting point, and that's going to give you a lot of the character in a certain amount of time. If you have a large load that you want to deliver, perhaps it's best to split it up, Mike was saying. Let's say you want to do 10 days of dry hopping. Instead of putting the whole thing at the beginning of the 10 days, you do 5 days, rack off of that, do another 5 days, and you're getting those brighter hop flavors without the vegetal, without the tannins and all that stuff, and you're gonna end up with a better overall beer that goes, right?
Yeah, more complex hop aroma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get
that's
a double
thing.
Dose.
Let me ask a question here. So, you mentioned earlier, Mike, that you sometimes would tend towards using the same hop as the bittering hop
for
your dry hopping. Mm-hmm. Now, what about adding more complex flavors? You know, how many hops should we use in a beer? That's a good question. And I'll start with my take on it, and you can correct me where I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But my thought was always, all right, you can use as many hops as you want if and only if they're all kind of in the same family.
Yeah.
If you use
they're
too many
citrus,
hops
yeah.
and they're all, yeah,
right.
you know, citrus, evergreen,
nobles,
fruity,
right.
noble, spicy, and you start picking, hops from all the spectrum.
You're muddled.
You're not making a good hop flavor. You're making a muddled mess.
Yeah.
You can go ahead and use 4 different hops, but they all need to be in the same family.
Right.
So keep your hops in the same hop family. Am I correct here?
No, I'm definitely, that's a definite dark line in the sand there. You don't want to mix families. You want to, keep them the same. And what I found with, for instance, this, I've got several beers and everybody knows about them that have like 6 different hops in them. those are pretty hard to, you know, those tend to get muddled. It's kind of hard not to with that many different hops.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I tend to do is to have, like, dominant hops and then background hops.
Mm-hmm.
That is, that, you know, I don't have, like, a lot of dominance being added at the same point. I might have two flavor hops, but one is sort of, like, higher alpha, more dominant, and the other is more of a background hop.
All right, so we're in the wrap-up here, but...
Oh,
all right, how do you... Well, I'm getting out of the wrap-up. How do you pick, you know, what's going to be dominant,
well,
what's
like,
going to be...
There are certain hops that have distinctive flavors that they just, nothing tastes like them, like Simcoe, Northern Brewer...
Yeah, Simcoe, kind of oniony, celery.
Columbia, yeah.
Northern Brewer is woody,
minty,
and minty.
Minty, yeah. Summit.
Columbus is kind of piney and cat pee like.
Right, right. So I don't. I let one of those dominate. I don't put two of those kind of hops in at the same time, or even the same beer. Sometimes.
Or in equal amounts, you might put
one
as a sub note.
Yeah, one would be the background or the foundation for the other.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's where that hop. Hop flavor wheel and Brewing Classic Styles may come in handy.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, buy a copy of Brewing Classic Styles if you're listening to this, and you know,
we'll sign it.
Yeah, we'll sign it. John will sign it. I'll sign it. You get a sign if you buy it from the Brewing Network store.
Right.
You get a sign by both of us.
Or you meet us in Australia.
Or in Australia, John Preston at Grain and Grape. He has probably about 20 Brewing Classic Styles that are signed by both John and myself.
Neat.
And signed copies of How to Brew also.
And How to Brew. Well, yeah, that's not an important book. I didn't really care for it. You know, it was all right. You know,
yeah, bathroom reading, right?
Oh, yeah. Hold the door open. Yeah.
Are we done?
Oh, you're wrapping up?
I was wrapping up, but Justin left, so we really can't end the show.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the important part. So he thought we were going to wax on for another 20 minutes.
I see. He left in a huff, maybe. Yeah.
He's got his panties in a bunch.
I get it.
It's that time of month for him.
All right.
But, you know, what haven't, you know, you always have great pieces of it.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is we talked about 2 ounces and five.
Right.
I mean, if you're making a really big bowl of beer, like my double IPA, I put like...
56 in 19.
You know, for a 12-gallon batch, I'm putting 11 ounces in a dry hop.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the beer. I don't, you know, here's the question I don't think I asked earlier was, is it possible to over... dry hop a beer? Is it possible to put too much in there?
Yeah, probably is. Yeah, I assume so. I don't know what that limit is. I never...
All right, so let's say you put so much in there that you don't see liquid anymore. It's like hops all the way to the top.
You can't get it out of the keg.
I think most American pale ales would,
like, oh, you know, from top to bottom, it's filled with hop sludge. And, you know, you got to put like a dip tube with a strainer on there to suck it out.
I think you got to have the malt character, the alcohol to hold that, because, I mean, you know, I've had bong water IPAs where there is so much resin.
Bong water.
You know, I mean, it's so much resin in that beer that is just, it coats your tongue, coats your throat, you know, you can't taste any malt. I mean, it has to be a beer style like double IPA.
They can hold
up
to that.
Yeah, they can. You've got the higher alcohol to cut through that. Otherwise, it's just.
All right. So I suppose if you're making some minor,
If we go overboard here,
but essentially, all right. So tasty, your tasty beer is you know, a serious beer with a lot of hop flavor.
Yeah.
Now. I don't know. I think you could hop that like you do the Pliny the Elder. I think it'd still be okay. I think there's a certain.
It won't
saturation.
Be a very good APA, but it would be okay.
Right. Yeah, well, sure. I think it'd be great.
Well, it'd
I
be
think,
too much hop room.
I don't think you can have too much. I think one of the things that happens is there's a saturation point where the hop resins and oils are no longer going to diffuse into the liquid. They're going to just drop out. I don't think you're going to get any more solubility.
Mm-hmm.
There's a saturation point where you know, it's not going to happen.
You know, you're tasty pale ale. I mean, how much dry hopping do you put in that?
I think it's like 3 ounces or something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, 3 ounces for this beer, this tasty and chat-tastic versus 11 ounces for a double IPA, and 2 ounces for an American pale ale, just a typical American pale ale. I mean. Yeah,
there's a lot of other hops though in there. From
they marry up. I mean, you know what, if I have a lot of late addition in that beer. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take a whole lot of aroma to like marry those up because they go together.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have a lot of flavor, just a small amount of aroma or late hop flavor from dry hop, but they match up. That is, one, you know, mm-hmm. complements the other, brings mm-hmm. the other out.
Yeah. I mean, dry hopping does put alpha into the beer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to see your IBUs go up.
But it's not a summarized.
It's not a summarized. It does not add to bitterness, but it adds to flavor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to get the resin. You're going to get the resin quality. You're going to get the flavors.
Right.
You're not going to, and your BUs, your measured BUs are going to go up, but the bitterness doesn't actually go up.
But I think this is one of the reasons why Pliny the Elder works. The malt has taken a back seat, and it's those resins that take the front seat and take the place of the malt in the balance of the beer.
Yeah, and I think the higher alcohol content helps support those.
Right, but I think, you know, the bittering that's in there, I think, you know, because there's very little malt, and I don't think, you know, necessarily the alcohol, because you can take 200 proof grain alcohol, right? Add it to a beer. Does it do anything for it? No.
No.
Right? It doesn't affect head retention. It doesn't do anything. The beer thins it out. That's all it does.
Right.
If you... But I think, you know, those resins start to take... Well, this is the genius of Vinny at Russian River, is that those resins start to take the place of that mouthfeel of malt and the sweetness of malt and the character of malt. Yeah. And you get this kind of balance in what we would all say is totally unbalanced beer. When you go to drink a pint of it, it's balanced. And it's like, well, how is it balanced? It's not... It's completely cattywampus for what we think is of balance. And this whole mindset that you need to balance bitterness with malt and that whole thing, he's balancing it with these resins. And it's totally unusual.
Time,
I'm totally blown away.
The mouthfeel, yeah.
I think the alcohol has a lot to do with it because you've got a solvent that is helping to lighten resin load.
You know, Vinny's Pliny the Elder is only like a 1070 something starting gravity. It's like 7%.
Well, it still works.
Yeah, but it's not like, you know, you need a huge amount of alcohol. I'm dying, you know, I'm convinced. We agree to disagree, but Justin is, you know, he's run out of tampons and he's got to go. And you know.
Although the word of this show, if soil load was earlier today,
yes,
cattywampus is this show's word.
Why, thank you. All right, so we did the wrap-up, and then we waxed on past that.
This dry hopping has been very satisfying for me.
You mean dry hopping or dry hopping?
And Tasty, what's this beer that you brought in the keg that we've been drinking?
It's a Märzen. That's that organic beer that I made for the Seven Bridges competition.
Doesn't taste like a Märzen to me.
Well, it's about 20% too hoppy.
A little
hoppy.
Too hoppy.
Too hoppy.
So. I see. But I do like it. I've had a few glasses.
It's like a hybrid.
I never would have said Märzen, though.
No.
Well, because most homebrewers are brewing like this overwhelmingly sweet, malty version of it, and it's not like a good classic Märzen like what that is. It's too hoppy, but I would tell you the malt carriage is perfect and the fermentation is perfect.
It's Tasty, of course.
Tasty knows what the hell he's doing. Right. He's a good brewer.
Yeah, I didn't bring it out, was it?
Okay, so that's the show, and the next show that's going to be coming up is Hot Side Aeration, by request from our good brothers in Australia.
Yeah, I've seen her dance, yeah.
John Preston, he's like, hey, look, you got to do Hot Side Aeration. So that's our next show. We're not even waiting. That list of shows we have, screw that. Hot Side Aeration is going to be the next one.
Hate to say it is.
And, you know, if you get a chance and you're browsing around the Brewing Network, there's a great forum, lots of people to chat with and answer questions for you. But, you know, important in that it helps fund the programming that you're listening to is you can go to the Brewing Network store. You can get a book, Brewing Classic Style, signed by both John Palmer and myself. The only place you can get it, other than Australia. And then there's the black hop grenade shirts. All of us love those and love to wear them. And they're going to have these really great glasses. By the time you hear this, if you're listening to podcast, go to the store and pick those up. And It'll be a great thing for all. If you get a chance, sign up for an AHA membership. We've got the National Conference coming to San Francisco in 2009, and AHA membership gets you a big discount. It helps support homebrewing and homebrewers all over the place. And John and I both write for BYO, Brew Your Own Magazine.
Check it out.
You can get a subscription again on the Brewing Network site. And the only reason we mention this is it helps you, it helps the Brewing Network. A few dollars go that way, and you can keep us going by doing that. And I think it's all good stuff, or I wouldn't mention it.
That's right.
All products that I enjoy, or I'll call it the way I see it. Anyways, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in about a month.
Brew strong, everybody.
Brew strong.
Love this hobby.